This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Bear Archery's Hunting 101, where we're talking elk hunting and elk calling with Mark Carlton from Native and Shane Mowry, the Bone Maniac. Guys, Native makes some phenomenal calls and some really cool custom handmade calls, some really cool customizable calls. That way it's not one size fits all, but you can find what works for you, what fits best for you, and the calls that you blow the best. Guys, we talk about tips for learning how to call. We talk about tips for getting ready for this fall. We talk about when to call, why to call, how to call. It's a phenomenal episode, especially if you're gearing up for an elk hunt this fall. Guys, as always, this episode is brought to you by our good friends over at Scentlock. So stay right here tuned in, and I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Bear Archery's Hunting 101 podcast, where hunters new and old come to learn and find inspiration from stories of hunts gone by. Everyone is welcome to enjoy the outdoor way of life, and there is no better time to start than right now. So let's head into the great outdoors with your host, Dylan Ray.
Guys, there's one fabric that if you're not wearing, you absolutely should be. It's a magic fabric. It changes everything about the way you layer, everything about the way you dress, everything about the way you hunt, and that is merino wool. I couldn't even begin to tell you all of the benefits of merino wool, and I'm going to miss some for sure. But guys, whether it's summer or whether it's winter, this is going to keep you cool in the summer. It's moisture wicking. It's going to pull the moisture away from your body, but it's also going to hold your heat in the winter. It is antimicrobial. It doesn't smell. It doesn't hold scent like other fabrics does. So if you're out on a five-day hunt, you don't have access to a washer, this is not going to hold your scent. It's not going to get stinky and nasty. It's also quick drying. You can hang this up in your tent. You can hang it up on a clothesline. It's going to dry really quick. But the coolest part about merino, in my opinion, is that when it gets wet, it still maintains its warmth properties. So if there's a light rain or a snow and this gets wet, it's still going to keep me warm. There's no itch. It's non-allergenic. It's an amazing fabric. Minus 33. I stumbled upon minus 33 by accident. I was on backcountry.com and they were having a blowout sale. I needed some new merino for a hunt that was coming up. And so I dove in. I bought it. And when I got it, it was the softest, best merino I have ever felt in my entire life. I've not worn anything but minus 33 socks for everyday life, whether I'm hunting, hiking, or just, you know, out for the day. I haven't worn anything but minus 33 socks in over a year and a half. Every single day I'm wearing their underwear. Every single time I'm out hunting, whether it's 100 or whether it's 5, I'm wearing some sort of beanie to cover up my chrome dome and to keep that covered up and warm or cool, whether if it's in the summer. But also that UV protectant. I like to wear it in the summer. Guys, minus 33 does merino, in my opinion, better than anybody else does it. Go check out minus 33 for all your merino wool. And if you haven't ever tried merino, guys, you are missing out. It will change the way you layer. It will change the way you hunt. Go check out merino wool and go check out minus 33. All right, gentlemen. So elk season is right around the corner. I am actually not going on an elk hunt this year. I opted in for some early season velvet whitetail hunts instead.
But nonetheless, people are getting geared up for elk season. So let's talk about some elk calls, different functions of each, how to use each maybe, and just have fun with it. Before we jump in, though, Mark, give us an introduction to yourself and everything you've got going on at Native.
So personal introduction side, my day job is a fire department paramedic guy. Native's kind of been a passion project that we started on the side. Our history goes way, way back. So it starts with my dad, who was Wayne Carlton, that brought over the first diaphragm elk call from the turkey world. And he was an original Gainesville, Florida native kid that grew up in Florida and then moved to Colorado in the about late 75, 76 is when he came out, and then stumbled into an opportunity into the game calling world. And Carlton's calls really got going about 83 and then took off from there. But he was kind of one of the main road pavers there in the industry, especially in that fourth, fifth generation window there of what businesses are today.
That's awesome. I'm actually headed to Gainesville next week. So I'll be in his stomping grounds.
Yep. Yeah, we'll be. We've got a lot of family still there and a lot of deep ties. So
by the time this episode airs, I think I can say this. I will have spent some time in Gainesville with Neil down there, who runs the factory, who is the last student of Fred Bear. So we'll have a podcast ready for you next week. So tune in with Neil. It's going to be a phenomenal episode. I'm excited about it. Going to have a good time in Florida. So you're definitely going to want to tune in next week to listen to Neil and all of his wealth of knowledge. Shane, you know, no stranger to the show, man. They don't need to hear your voice much.
I don't need to talk.
We were just talking. Shane's here for one reason. That's to kill stuff. Like, he, you know, he's not good to look at. But he can kill a whole lot of crap. So that's why you're here.
Don't be jealous of my beard.
I am.
I can't grow one for at least another 10 years at the firehouse. So I do have beard envy.
No shame in my game, bro. I am definitely envious of the beard, but Mark is a friend of Shane's, and we wanted to just talk elk hunting, talk elk calling, talk some different calls. So gentlemen, before we jump in, first off, leading up to season, I get this question a couple times a year. I don't know why I get the question, because I'm not an elk hunter by trade, but I get the question about practicing for elk calling quite a bit. Maybe that's because I'm in the Midwest and like you need practice, but what are some good practices for practicing leading up to season?
Practice. So the conversation has changed, I think, a lot in the last 10, 15 years on calls in general. So like a lot of your viewership, a lot of the guys listening on your end, I'm sure going to be Eastern based guys. And I think calls have changed a lot from your turkey guy, because we've got 6 million annual turkey hunters, right? So guys are super familiar with a turkey breed, versus there's been a lot of technology and changes on the elk side. And I think that in practicing, I think it starts with trying to find something that works and you're familiar with first, and then finding, you know, basically a place where you can kind of be successful there, to where when you're practicing, you're making some gains. And I think what's important is a lot of the domed over reads on the elk side now are very loosely stretched reads. And the reason that dome is there is that dome is like a duck call or anything else that you put in your mouth. So as soon as you put a duck call, say, to your mouth, there's back pressure there, right? And you cup your hand over it, and you can jam up to a high ball. You can do some different things with it. But your mouth is the same thing. It's still an instrument. It still builds pressure. So we figured out how to maximize that on the elk side. So those domed over reeds run very differently than the traditional turkey reeds. And tubes, how things fit, size of frame for your mouth, all those things make a difference on being successful when you do practice. But I think guys need to be aware that when they buy reeds for elk hunting, and the domed over reeds, I think, are prevalently the strongest breed out there on the elk side for sure. But be keenly aware that they are built differently, as far as you really got to pair them with a really good tube that matches up and gets everything correct and builds the proper amount of back pressure in your mouth. And if you want to go the other way, there's also some, definitely some varieties that I don't think are quite as good of a read, being more traditional turkey stuff without the dome, that are more tension based, that as soon as you put, say, more tongue pressure, you get more octaves out of the reed, versus on these domed over reeds, you're also going to push a lot more air from your diaphragm through, and you're going to pair it with a good tube that makes a difference. What guys need to practice, I think first thing is they got to find what they're going to be proficient on and familiar with, and then kind of go from there. But guys don't practice near enough, man. And I'm sure Shane can attest to this. When guys come out here, they're not proficient enough at the calling side to where they just don't want to screw up. Like, they don't want to say the wrong thing. So they're not able to utilize that tool as much as they should, as much as a guy does say a turkey call. Practicing is a thing, man. Guys have got to get kind of dialed into it, and they need to get stuff in their hands earlier than later.
So, well, let me just say this too. If you're not well practiced, just don't call. Like, leave that to the guide, leave that to your buddy, leave that to the person. Like, don't, and that goes with anything. Like, I grew up a big duck hunter growing up in Arkansas. I grew up a big duck hunter. And dude, it'll about kill you when a buddy says, man, I've been practicing my duck call. And then birds working in. And then somebody sounds like a dying coyote on a duck call. And you're like, bro, well, you just screwed that up for us. So if you're not well practiced, and just don't do it. Leave that to the guide. Leave that to the buddy. Leave that to the more well experienced person. Shane, what are you when you're choosing an elk call? What are you looking for? Like, what makes you go, yeah, that's the one I want?
Well, I'm gonna top off with what Mark had said, is they don't practice enough. And I think first off is understanding the language, you know, and most guys that come out, you know, and to reiterate what you were saying is they leave it to the guide or a buddy, but most of them are, and we'll say it, you know, social media has driven a lot of DIY guys that come out and want to do it on themselves. And they don't know what they're doing. So they'll go in the woods, and actually it's into the benefit to other guys around the area, because they push the animals away, you know, or they educate them like the Eastern birds. Right. So, you got to speak what the language is. For me, it's about what tag I have, you know, and understanding, okay, I'm going to go in and do my scouting. I want to understand the group of elk that I'm going to be hunting, or the drainage, or the unit, and what type of pressure is there. So for me, it's about knowing what I'm up against, whether that's, you know, hunter pressure, whether that's wolf pressure, or just the terrain itself. So I'm kind of old school on just how I turkey hunt too. Talking can be too much, right? So for me, it's about location. And then it's about being able to slip in within the comfort range of whatever animal I am, whether I'm got a cow tag or bull tag or whatever, and then trying to approach from there. Sometimes I get it, because I'm not the best caller, and I'll admit it. But I know enough to get the job done. So and sometimes there's a lot of screw up involved with that, and I think that just comes from understanding from my part, and Mark probably will attest to this, is the elk here in Idaho speak completely different than what they do in Colorado, or say New Mexico or Arizona, where there's not a lot of predation within that. So they're tight-lipped a lot here, you know. Yeah.
Well, people don't get that at all, like, about any species, dude. People are like, and I can speak a lot more knowledgeable on calling whitetails than anything, because, well, I live in Kansas. But, you know, people ask me all the time, like, do you call a lot? And I'm like, that depends, dude. If I'm in Arkansas, no. If I'm in Missouri, not really. If I'm in Kansas, heck yeah, I do. If I'm in Texas, heck yeah, I do. Because you have to know, where are these animals more vocal at? And there, it's not one size fits all. And that's for turkeys, ducks. Man, if you get further down south, you can burn a duck because they've been shot at over calls for the last month and a half. So you can, if you start blowing too much, dude, you mess yourself up. So people have to understand that's not just with elk. It's not just with deer. It's not one size fits all. Like, you have to understand where you're hunting and where are things different at. What are some good resources that you guys know of as far as learning how to call, practicing calling, learning the vocalization of elk? What are some good resources that guys can dive into and start watching and listening to gain that experience?
Man, there's a ton on that. And I wanted to go back just for a second, though, and touch on that where we were just for a second. I think one of the other things, too, that comes up is what's your expectation of your hunt? Whether you're going, because your expectations coming in is a huge factor. Are you self-hunting? Sure. Are you hunting close to the road? Are you deep wilderness hunting? Are you with an outfitter? Do they only have 2,000 acres? Do they have 500,000 acres? Like expectations and having that conversation is huge. Because if you're going with an outfitter and you're wanting a deep, remote wilderness pack hunt, you know, that's going to change stuff a lot. If you want to really get out and walk and pack and see the country, and that guy only has 2,000 acres leased, you're not going to be happy with that hunt. I mean, there's so many things there. If you put the question, what are your expectations to it first, I think that really helps clean some of that up and at least get you going in the right direction. Because I think a lot of guys, I see it every year in Colorado, right? So at least in the past, I think we're shifting daily, but you know, we've been the open state where everybody comes, right? We had over, man, I've got to pull the data, but I think we had over 20,000 archery hunters in the state of Colorado last year. So when I graduated, we had 7,000 for elk. So now we're at 20. So the numbers coming into the state is more and more and more. So that changes how we approach everything. So I think that question has to be asked more and more and has to be fleshed out and figuring out what you're going to do and how you're going to hunt. And we see guys coming every day and they've got tree stands in the truck. And then in my head, living here, hunting every day, I'm thinking, man, you ain't going to get that tree stand even close to where you need to be. But, you know, those guys, those out-of-staters are also crutching off of what they know and what they're comfortable with too, which I totally understand. But there's some reality there too. Like the nearest wallow I've got is a 2.5 hour drive than a 3 hour hike in. I'm not taking a tree stand.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's just some realities there of, like I said, of expectations of what your plan is. And, you know, I hate it when guys come out, man, and they just spend thousands of dollars and didn't even see an elk. And it is more common than the other side, I can promise you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's why, Shane, you'll get a kick out of this, dude. I was with Waylon at Ace Outfitters there in Idaho, and man, there was lots of fires going on around us. And so the elk just shut up. You know, they weren't responding well. And we come across a tree stand that was hung. He knew it was there, but we stumbled upon it. And there was tracks everywhere, crossing every which way underneath that tree stand. And so Shane said, did I want you to sit here? Not Shane, sorry. Waylon said, did I want you to sit here all day long? And I'm like, all right, I'll do it. And he said, every 45 minutes or so, just blow this call. And I'm like, well, I've never blown one of those. What do you do? He's like, you literally just blow into it. And I'm like, okay, sounds good. And so I sit there all day long, every 45 minutes to the hour, I'd hit that call. But, you know, best way I knew how, dude, all I did was blow into it. Well, the next day I blew into it and Waylon said, what the heck are you doing? And I said, blowing into this call like you told me to. And he said, was that what you were doing all day yesterday? And I said, yeah. And he said, no wonder you didn't see any stinking bulls, dude. That's horrible. And I'm like, you told me to just blow into it. And he said, no, dude, that's not even close. And I'm like, well, that's fantastic. And so
man, I still think, man, the most important thing, Shane's right. You don't have to be perfect. but
he said, I don't even know what that is. Get that out of here.
But cadence is probably number one. I think calling and being proficient, cadence is absolutely at the top of the list. Elk all have their different voices. Like I get a little cracked up with, we just like listening to ourselves bugle a lot, but I can promise you, man, in the woods, you're going to hear stuff that you're going to think is a red Hereford bull out there. That's a 300 and something inch elk that doesn't sound anything like a damn elk. So absolutely. Cadence, and intent. I mean, there's still going to be things that are more valuable than sounding perfect by any means. The biggest thing is just don't sound repetitive. Like, I hate squeeze me's, I hate hoochie mamas, I hate those things that are just repetitive and they sound like the same thing over and over and over again. If I nail a guy in the woods that's another hunter, it is always off of cadence.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
So what's the best place they can go to? Like, somebody's going on their first ever elk hunt. They have no idea what an elk sounds like. They've never heard one in the wild. They're going on their first elk hunt, but they really want to start diving into calling. What are some guys out there to tune into, some YouTube videos to watch, you know, to really get a good idea about, like you said, cadence and how to blow a call and how to work a call? Where can they tune into for that type of stuff?
Well, the first place that I think is best is to listen to real elk. So yeah, that means 100%. Like, tuning in to listen to guys that posted, like, I've got stuff on my phone constantly, even after I called them my first elk at 14, I'll be 48 this year. It's not that I don't know what elk, I still listen to live elk constantly. So like iVideo Wildlife does a bunch of just posting elk bugling, cow calls. J. Scott Outdoors has that's all the guy posts, I swear, is elk bugling. It's stuff like those guys that search those things, real elk, more than anything else. As far as learning to use stuff, there's some really good, there's going to be quite a few guys out there now. I mean, there's Elk Brothers does a really good job. They even do a elk calling school. Elk Call Academy does one with Michael Batiste. Of course, Elk 101's been around forever, but there's getting to be quite a few resources out there now for guys to learn from. I don't post near as much as I should about running diaphragms and learning. That's something I probably need to tend to a little bit, but there are those resources out there now. But first and foremost, man, listen to real elk.
Yeah.
I agree with that, because real elk, the one thing that I'm really hell bent on is don't listen to the World Elk Calling Championships.
No, 100%.
Don't listen to those guys. I don't know. I think they're too perfect, you know, and
they are
realistic. You know, you don't hear that in the elk woods, you know.
Yeah. No, I say the same thing, like, about duck hunters. Like, the championship duck calling competition's retarded. I mean, it's nothing. Those ducks don't scream a highball for 4 minutes like you're listening to at the championships. Yeah. So you're 100% correct. It's a different game. It's a different game they're playing. So don't, I mean, and exactly what you just said, you know, I tell people, I'm like, you want to hear what a duck sounds like? Go sit at your park for an hour. Like,
yep,
just go down to the local park and listen to the ducks. You know, they're not just screaming. You know, the ducks fly by, they're not just screaming, but they're just sitting there quacking a little bit. Yeah. Like,
well, and that's true. As I mean, I'm out a lot, you know,
yeah,
in the field probably more than anybody else, you know, but. And if you're out there 365, you will definitely encounter, you know, the animal, and you just sit down and just listen, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
See how they congregate with one another. Not that I could ever mimic them or anything like that, because each one of them has their own.
Have their own voice. Absolutely. Yep.
But just like we do, you know. I don't speak correctly, and so I don't call correctly.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't talk good.
The calling contest is a good excuse to practice. And I think it's built around what we are limited to as human beings. Like there's some stuff we just cannot reproduce, man. It's just too wild.
Oh, right.
We're trying, but man, there's some of the, when you listen to a big bull, there's just some secondary and third stuff going, like, we'll never be able to reproduce it. We can get close, but man, they all have their own voice. And I laugh. I got into an elk tornado last year, just a convergence of about three herds, which is a rare. A guy usually gets it done a few times in his life if he hunts a lot, where, you know, you just get a couple hundred elk of a lot of big bulls and all hell breaking loose. And just the variety of sounds that came out of those bulls. And they were all each and unique, where I was able to watch them enough for 20 minutes and identify, this is that one, this is that one, this is this. And then I was counting off 340, 360, 380, and trying to make sure audibly I had that attached, so I knew what I was chasing.
Well, and that's exactly what guys are so concerned with. And this is not just with elk again, this is with all calling. They're so concerned with making the perfect noise. And then you go out to the woods and you hear an elk just like squeak and you're like, what the heck was that? Yep. Like I would be mortified if I did that into my call. Like, but dude, every elk sounds different. Every buck sounds different. Every duck sounds different. Like there is no cut uniform. This is the noise you have to make to bring the bulls in. And that's what guys have to understand.
There isn't. And I think, and I find this the same. I'm curious on the duck conversation too. I think whether it's goose, duck, turkey, elk, deer, I think there's a rattle and a pitch to whatever call you're using that hits a note with what you're calling to that calls them in. I like a really high pitch yappy turkey call. When I'm elk calling, I want something real high pitch and ringing that punches through the air. Same deal on my run, my cow calls. It's the guys come down in conversation all the time on like, and I can run the hell out of a diaphragm at a world-class level, but if you give me one call to choose, I'll take, we've got like a $15 open reed cow call that has a super high pitch whine to it called the Green Weenie out of all things. And I would take that over every diaphragm I've got in the pack. Cause it has a note that it rings and it punches out there.
Yeah.
Time and time again, that thing has killed more elk than everything else I've got.
Well, I think you're 100% right. And I think going back to it's different everywhere you go, which is why dudes have lanyards of 15 calls because, you know,
yep.
Going back to ducks, I mean, there's times you get someone, you're like, dude, they're not getting it. And then you blow a different call and it's like, okay, that's the one they want. Like, that's what they like. Especially, man, like, you look at flooded timber in southern Arkansas versus wheat fields in Kansas, like they like completely different stuff. And it's going to be the same. I mean, that's the same with all species. Like Kansas deer sound a whole lot different than Texas deer. Why? They weigh 100 pounds more. Like yep. they're bigger bodied deer. They have more. I mean, so it's going to be different everywhere you go.
Well, and I've the traditional, like, location bugle is just real. I'll do one real quick. It's just real high and fluty. That's our typical opening bugle to try to get something to response. I can't tell you how often, how gnarly and nasty I've gotten that bulls have answered back that I had no clue that were there. That was much more like. That was just, I mean, it goes completely against the grain of. Sound small, be little, don't be over threatening. It's completely the opposite. But time and time again, before I leave an area that I feel like there should be elk, I will make sure to throw out every call I've got and every voice to make sure I don't miss something.
Yeah. No, you're right. 100%. So you keep talking about all these different calls. Walk the listeners through all of the different types of calls they need to be aware of. And then it calls as far as like, not noises that we make, but the actual different calls, that they need to be aware of when choosing calls.
I still think it is going to be somewhat traditional. So like my opening sequences will be like just an open reed cow call. I don't actually have one on me. But it's, I'll start with something subtle of just something like, and I'll just throw a little bit out there and then I'll sit. I'll wait a few more minutes and I'll come back with another one. I just keep it organic. I space it out a little bit. I try to imagine what I would see an elk doing in the woods and what that would sound like. And I give it some time. I'll sit in areas if I really feel like there should be elk there. Like if I know it's a good drainage, I'll sit in that drainage for 45 minutes if I got to. Give them some time. Because quite often, man, you'll get, like I laughed. The bull that I killed last year, I had four bulls working that drainage. I knew it was a good drainage. I ended up shooting one that sounded beefy enough. Like I picked one out of the three that were working. I'm like, all right, that's what I'm going after. And I ended up shooting a bull. And then on the pack out, I came across the trail and there was about a 370 sitting in the trail, sleeping, staring at me after I woke him up. And what I miss is within all those bugles, he had just done some real subtle, just, and that was, he did it twice looking back at it. And I missed that. So I shoot a 300 inch bull and there's a 360, 370 sitting in the middle of the trail that I could have killed with a rock on my way up because I wasn't paying attention and listening and giving that some time. So, you know, going back, have your sequences. I'll open up with cow calls and I'll do some light bugles, but I'll give it some time for that to develop more than anything.
But what do you say to the guy who just gets out and immediately starts ripping off? Like,
know where you're at. First of all, so I still hunt really, really deep, remote, dark timber. Like I'm 3 hours in of just solid walking before I even start hunting. And that's after a 2.5 hour drive into the woods. I'm as remote in Colorado as you can get today. Kind of know where you're at. The other contrast is, say, Unit 62 out here is out our back door in Colorado. It's 800,000 acres. So it's 200,000 acres bigger than Rhode Island. All right, it's a state. It's the busiest unit in the state of Colorado. Like, there are people all over that damn thing. I'll call like at 4 a.m. when it's dark, and I'll hunt drainages. I'll do more of the sit and wait mode. When I'm in deep, heavy timber in remote Colorado, I bugle like a fiend. So it's still kind of coming back to that, being aware of where you're at.
Yeah. Dane, you laugh. That's because you've seen it more often than not. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you stay the hell away from those kind of guys that just scream their heads off. Or you get away from them and they push out to you. So,
yeah, when I get in 62, there's just so many other people in 62 that I will hunt the top end of the drainages or the bottom end of those drainages and try to find those funnels and hunt where those elk are getting pressured to.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Guys, there's not many things that I'm going to tell you to stop and do right now. One of those things is to stop and go join Pope and Young right now. It's $45 for the entire year to be a member of Pope and Young. And what that does for you is that helps to ensure your rights as a bow hunter. Pope and Young is constantly fighting for your rights as a bow hunter. They are the national bow hunting organization in North America. They exist to protect your rights as a bow hunter. They are all the time going before state legislators to fight for your rights and to continue protecting your rights as a bow hunter. The record book exists in the first place because somewhere between us and the Indians, people had lost sight that bow hunting was a lethal way of harvesting big game. And so Glenn St. Charles and his group of cohorts, they started the record book so they could take it to different states and show that bow hunting is, in fact, a ethical way of harvesting big game. So guys, don't get caught in Pope and Young only being a record book. They are your voice for bow hunters, and there's power in numbers. So I would highly encourage you to join today because we need to stand together to protect our rights. Also, what you might not know is if you've bought a bear bow, you can go and register that bow, and you're actually going to get a free Pope and Young membership. Bear Archery is such a believer in the mission of Pope and Young and what they stand for and what they do to protect our rights that they are going to buy your first year's membership. So if you've bought a bow, go online and register that bow, and you're going to get a free year's membership to Pope and Young. But guys, I would encourage you, stop right here, right now, and go join Pope and Young because we have to protect our rights as bow hunters.
So Shane, what is your, what's your biggest tip you got? Somebody's headed to elk hunt. They've never called before. What's the biggest tip you got for the new elk hunter?
Find somebody who knows what they're doing. Yeah. I get it all the time, you know, on the guide side and they'll say, where should I go? And I think it's getting tougher and tougher.
Agreed.
You know, Colorado's, still have OTC. I don't know how much longer that's going to be. Oregon shut down the OTC. You know, you can still get landowner tags in New Mexico. Idaho goes out quick. Washington, we still have OTC, you know, but that's a tough hunt. You know, there's a lot of private land in Washington. I don't have a good answer for that. The resources, I think, are tightening up a lot as far as that's concerned, you know.
Well, and that's why, like, I know the appeal to, like, the dudes that are hard on for do-it-yourself. Like, I get that. Like, you're bad to the bone. Nobody helped you. But I also have heard from several guys, they're like, yeah, this will be my 9th year, and I'm still trying to find some elk. And I'm like, what? Like, you spent 9 years going to elk hunt and haven't found them yet. And they're like, well, I just can't afford an outfitter. I'm like, dude, over the 9 year span, you've still dropped $7,000 or $8,000. So put that into 1 year, hire a guide and take all this information, all this knowledge, ask them all week long. Dude, I drove Waylon nuts because, like, I drive any of my outfitters nuts because I'm always asking them questions. Why do you do this? Why do you go here? Why are we going? I don't care if it's a turkey hunt or a gator hunt. Like, I just want to learn everything I can about that species while I'm with an outfitter. So I'm asking them all these questions. So save yourself the heartache, save yourself the trouble of 8 years of trying to find your first elk, hire a guide, ask them all these questions, ask them how to call, why to call, when to call, where are elk at this time of day? Why are they going here this time of day? Learn as much as you can from that outfitter, and it will make your following DIY years so much more enjoyable.
Yeah. Access is the big issue. You know, when you're trying to point guys out here that are going to do the self hunt, everything out west revolves around water, like everything does. When I chase elk, man, they're just going from water source to water source to some degree. And some of them are going to live on that water source. Some of them are going to be what I call residential elk, and they'll stay in that drainage and just not bugle as much, be quiet, and run around in circles. But it is always revolving around the water out here. And, you know, one of the other things too, that even if we live out here and you can't learn the area unless your boots are on the ground, but I even go as far as flying in the summertime. Like, I've got some buddies that got pilot license, small planes, pay the gas fee, and we'll just get in there and we'll go fly units. Cause even on a unit, man, think about how overwhelming it is to come out here and hunt a unit with 800,000 acres and to try to find the main hot spots in that unit to go hunt your elk. It's impossible. And even me, I'm amazed. We'll get an airplane out here and we'll go fly. And it's usually $300 in plane fuel to go do it. But I swear, man, you'll get up above that unit and they are still in a handful of places over the entire unit where they like to congregate. There's elk everywhere. Don't get me wrong. But man, there's a lot more right here and there's a lot more over here. And it's just, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. I think for the guys to come out here, the DIYers, it's really, really hard because it is just, there's just so much acreage out here. It is just overwhelming the magnitude of how much country there is to learn and to hunt. And even that, man, I look at where I've been the last 15 years and it's a dot in the middle of that unit. And I'm amazed at how much country I don't hunt. Every year I get over another drainage and find a little bit more water. And it's usually chasing elk around is what leads me there. But man, it's to try to figure out the access out here is no small task. You are not wrong.
Well, dude, I had a buddy come home from his first ever elk DIY hunt. And he's like, yeah, man, all I shot was a stinking cow. And he was like disappointed. I'm like, dude, you've never been to Colorado and you've never elk hunted. Like, the fact that you got on a cow elk with your bow and shot it is phenomenal. So, it like, is. don't get yourself down, man. And I think that's what a lot of guys, and it's, again, this is the same with any kind of species you're hunting. The expectations aren't a reality. And they think they're going to come to Kansas and just shoot a 180. They think they're going to roll into Colorado and just find a 350 bull because that's what they see on Instagram. And the expectations just aren't a reality. And so if you go in with the expectation of like, man, my first year, I really want to shoot a cow. But if I see a spike, dude, it's getting an arrow. I mean, like, whatever. But if you go in with more realistic expectations, it sets you up for success.
Well, and guys need to come year to year, and they need to pick a good unit, something that they can draw readily, and try to come every year if they can. Yeah. Because every hunt, man, even living here, every hunt leads me to something new, and I'm able to build it and hunt that area way more efficiently. I actually think as we're changing Colorado, I don't think we're very far from you're going to have to pick your unit and you're going to have to stay.
Yeah, I think so.
In the unit, I actually think guys will hunt that unit one hell of a lot better.
Yeah,
because you're right. Like, even living here, being over the counter 10 years ago, I'd start the season on 62, I'd go to 54, I'd end up in 74. I would just hunt it seasonally. But I can tell you, there's so many nooks and crannies in every little thing. There's a seep here that's just got just enough water to hold some elk. There's there's a staging area over on the next ridge that doesn't look like it from the road, but it's there. And they just really dig that. So it's, you got to learn your area too. I think the Southern guys really get, we always fall back to what we know. It goes back to like that tree stand comment. Well, we know tree stand, so I'm going to take a tree stand. But I think you've got to be a little bit more objective about it and think about that reality. And you're right. Like shooting a cow on your first trip out here is, man, like 7% of the tags fill out 100% of the kills out here. Like 7% of the guys, like we just, the guys that get good killing elk, keep killing elk. And there's a bunch of guys that don't, you know? So I think you've really got to step back and look at that.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't learn all that in one week's hunt.
No, it's a lifetime, like, man. It really is.
I mean, you learn something every day, you know, that you're out there.
So Shane, what made you fall in love with Native?
Wayne's been around forever, right?
He is.
You know, so and that's what my dad used. And you know, I feel like with this V3 right here, that Mark sent out, it seals to my mouth really good. And I'll be the first one. I mean, I don't make perfect sounds by any means, but I feel like I use this call better than anything else that I've used. That 750, I like that.
Yep.
That call.
It's a different voice.
Yeah, I really like that. I've had a lot of response with that that call last year. And I got a little fixated on that one bull that
that's pot calling the kettle black this year. I understand,
man. I've always been like, I'm gonna shoot the first thing I call in, and that's just how I've always been. And that bull's a little special, but he's around this year, so
yeah, I did it last year. So yeah. I got into that elk vortex of hell last year with all those elk, and my goal was 300 or better. And when I got to 380, my plan went out the window. Completely out the window. Yeah, it was off. So going back to the calls a little bit. So what we've done on the V3, in making guys proficient, the biggest thing that comes up is finding what fits. So we built a back pressure reed with a really good tube. That's our tube will be ready here in just a couple of weeks. It's on the water now. But what we did unique with the V3 is we built it in three sizes. So traditionally we've only made sizes, like we've been really limited with what we've done there. So we've built a small, medium, and large frame. Large being the same width as what your turkey reeds are. So guys will be familiar with that. It's not, I don't want large to be misinterpreted. It's no bigger than a turkey reed. But we've sized those out to fit everybody accordingly. So we sell it like in a sizer pack of a small, medium, and large. So guys can grab three, find what fits. And then on each size, we have three different weights of latex to go with that, that they can choose from those also and get deeper into it. And then we also have gone as far as we've got two different styles of tape now. We've got the old style soft tape, which is honestly just gaff tape. We use gaff tape on reeds for 70 years now, almost. Like from day one, we've been using duct tape and gaff tape. So we've got that. And then we have a new, much more durable waterproof material called call armor that we also have as a secondary option. So we've really gone into the development and options on how guys can pick stuff up to find what they're going to be successful on.
Well, and that right there, not only with calls, but that right there is going to that's what sets people apart, is because one size does not fit all with anything. I can't think of one thing in the outdoors that it's like one size is perfect for everybody. No. And that's why I believe is what sets you apart is it's not, well, this is what you get. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
And we're going
to give you
that.
Something to make sure it works. You know what I mean? We're going to give you options to make sure it works. Which Shane, I don't know if you've had much time to spend with the new Bear broadheads, but that's what I love about those is it's like, you know, it's not pick your size and order it. It's order a pack and figure out what your arrow likes the best. And you can really tune that. You know what I mean? And that's just what's going to set great apart from good is customization to fit the hunter. And so kudos to you, man. I think that's what really sets you apart and makes you special.
Well, and then like I said, we're trying, and we've really, when we came back into 2015, we've really listened to what we were bad at first and really try to listen to what people wanted. So everything we've built around is built around hunting and trying to give guys options to, like I said, to fit wherever they want to be on the spectrum. So we've really dug hard this last 2 years on development on frame sizes, and we've got a pretty full gamut at this point. I think we probably got the most diverse line going at the moment.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, as far as the duct tape, I've noticed, you know, the old style that people are having trouble getting a good seal and get the right pitches out. And would you agree, Mark, that with this new style that you have, I know there was a name for it, but I can't remember what it is. I think it seals to my roof of my mouth a lot better, and I'm able to get a much better sound out of it versus the old duct tape style.
I mean, we're offering both it, you know, this year, but at the same time, I keep coming back to the new stuff just because it's just holds up so much better. It seals good for me. It's different. It doesn't feel quite like the gaff tape. I will say, like, if you're used to diaphragms and you jump over to what and it's called call armor is what we're calling it. It's heat sensitive. So where you throw gaff tape in your mouth, it's immediately soft. The call armor is heat sensitive. So it takes a couple minutes to come up to your body temperature to get to that appropriate softness. That's the only difference.
Right.
That I can really come up with. I mean, we've been running a ton. We're selling about 50-50 between the two, but all options are available online. Like guys can really play with and figure out what they want to do there.
Right. And I think that's a lot to do with just guys not understanding what it is. You know, it's just new technology and new stuff. But if you use it, then I feel like you'll get a much better sound out of seal wise to the roof of your mouth anyway.
Yeah, I found it, but I mean, we've been doing it a long time, man. Like I go back to Dad's first story when the first diaphragm he saw when he was a kid, which had to be in the 50s, was an uncle, and I'm sure this was like a passed down, hey, this is how I'm doing this, and they had taken a condom and they had sandwiched it in between a lead top to a tape toothpaste tube that they had filed out into a horseshoe shape. And then slapped it all together with duct tape and cut it out with a pair of scissors. That was his first diaphragm you ever saw as a kid. So we've been using it for that long. And by the way, we are still using condom and turkey calls, where that little magic ingredient they say prof, that is still prophylactic. So we are still using condom from 1950.
Yeah. These turkey calls are brought to you by Trojan. Yeah. Protecting you in the bedroom, helping you in the woods.
You're not going to be able to use it as a pickup line in the bar. So, or well,
you've obviously never been to Mississippi.
Yeah. What do you do with that? I've never been as serious about the calling competition stuff as I could. And I've always joked at myself about it. Like, I mean, I can't even use that as a pickup line. I mean, how does that even come across? Like, hey, want to hear me sound like a rutting bull elk? I'll show you my diaphragm made out of condom. I mean, what do you do with that? I don't.
You ought to try a bar in Mississippi. You'd be amazed what them girls fall for.
It has changed today, for sure.
So, gentlemen, guys are gearing up for elk season. They're getting their gear ready. They're sighting in their bows. They're going on hikes every morning. What's your number one tip for guys that are getting ready for an elk hunt this coming September? What's your number one tip to get them ready?
Be prepared for being uncomfortable and practice before you get here.
Yeah.
Because you're physically going to be uncomfortable, for sure. It's physically more than guys ever plan on.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, Shane, I don't think you can even plan for it.
I mean, it's my biggest thing I see is just they don't have the right gear. They just boots. I feel like boots is an important
100%. It's the most important thing.
Boots and packs,
in my opinion. Yeah, boots 100%.
And yeah. But mostly for the new guys to come out because they don't use the packs.
Agree. No, I agree, man. Wholeheartedly.
Tell guys, if you're going to, like, if you want to get into elk hunting, like, I understand it can be a massive undertaking to get boots and packs and binos and all of that stuff in a spotting scope. I understand that can be a massive price money dump. So work on one thing a year, like your first year, invest in a really good pair of boots. Your second year, invest in a really good pack. Your third year, invest in a really good lightweight tent. You name it, but figure out, you know, what order you want to do that in and do it little bits at a time and upgrade stuff as you go. But yep. I absolutely always tell people, start with boots, 100%.
Yep. And be self-aware too. And Shane's going to agree with me on this, I know. So this is the way a five-day guided hunt goes in my past experience. The guys show up full of adrenaline. They kick ass for 2 days. Third day, they've died. Like they completely crashed. The boots that they bought, $100 pair of boots from some store somewhere, because they're only going to go for 5 days, so they don't want to justify a nice $500 pair of boots. They get blistered up by day two. The adrenaline's wore off. Physically, they crash because they're not ready for the altitude or the physical slacking you just took. So then they lay down for 1 day, and then the next day they halfway go, and then by the fifth day, they make one more mad push, and then they look back at their hunt and say, man, I missed half
that
my
sucked.
Hunt. That sucked. And I missed half my hunt, you know, and, yeah. and that's the reality. I think guys, it was funny. I was listening to a thing with Cliff Gray the other day, and he was doing why people fail. And it was just like a 10-minute clip, but it was pretty spot on, man. It was guys show up and the raring and tearing. And I mean, guides and outfitters, we see it regularly, that this is the crash cycle.
Yeah.
You know, but absolutely. It always comes down to gear. And I think boots is the number one fail.
Yeah. No, buy a good pair of boots, buy a good pair of merino socks. It'll change. It'll make your hunt so much better.
Yep. I live in wool socks for sure.
I was the same way. I was exactly what you just described, my first elk hunt. And I was with some really experienced guys. I was hunting with the guys from SNS Archery. And, you know, I'd spent a lot of time on the phone with them, getting a lot of advice. But I showed up in $100 pair of boots that I got on sale at Cabela's. And I thought, dude, these have to be good boots, bro. I spent $100 on them. Like, and I was a young kid. I was a young married guy. And so $100 was a lot of money. And I show up and I thought, well, this sucks. Like, and so I remember getting home thinking, all right, well, honey, we got to take out a loan because I'm buying some good boots. And she said, you bought good boots before you went. And I said, no, I mean good boots, like good boots. And so, I've never ever looked back ever.
Yeah, but they'll last you, man. Like I've been running the same pack for 15 years. I paid a grand for it, but I'm still running it.
Yeah. Shane, what's your number one tip other than boots? Your number one get ready for calling tip.
Well, I think it just goes right back to if number one tip is finding a finding a reed that's going to fit your mouth, that's going to work for you, or an external. And I guess, I don't know. I go back to, calling too much. I just, my number one thing is if you're going to go out and do it yourself, just don't call too much.
Yeah.
That's my thing. You know, there is a such thing. I'm a waiting kind of guy. I'm all 100% patient. If that animal knows you're there, curiosity will always kill the cat. That's my number one tip for turkey hunting. That's my number one tip for elk hunting. And that's just, I play by those rules, and the only time I alter is if I get this fixation that I'm killing a specific animal, and then I usually wait to the last couple of days, and I'm like, oh crap, I better kill the next thing I call in. And then it's a meat hunt.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't need to tell you about the blazer vein. You're probably familiar with the blazer vein, and you're probably familiar with boning. Boning has been around forever. It's a name you can trust. They sell products you can trust. They have everything that you need to build your own arrows. All of the jigs to flet your own arrows, all of the veins, all of the wraps. countless numerous types of vanes and wraps to build any kind of configuration you want. They also have some really cool Fredbear branded products with their Fredbear camo wraps and their Fredbear flannel wraps. Something that's really cool about that Fredbear flannel, that's actually a photo that was taken of one of Fredbear's flannel famous shirts, you know, the red and gray and black that he always wore. That's actually a photo taken of his personal shirt and put on a wrap. It looks really cool, especially on some traditional arrows. But my very favorite configuration, and this is coming from an arrow junkie that's tried out all different kind of vanes and all different kind of configurations, I have found that this configuration stabilizes pretty much every arrow. It's whisper quiet. They fly fantastic. The 3-inch Bronco vane in a 4-fletch absolutely flies like a dart, whether you're shooting mechanicals or big fixed. This is going to be a fletching configuration that will work. Again, whisper quiet, long range accuracy. I love this configuration. This is on every single one of my compound arrows. They just work. Guys, I would highly encourage you to check out Boning, not just for the Blazer vane, but for the Heat vane, for the Broncos, for the X vanes. Everything that you need to build your own arrows is right there on Boning's website. They've been around for ages, and I promise you, if you order from them, you're going to get products that you can trust.
Mark, where can they find Native? Where can they find everything they need to about Native?
Best thing is just website for us. So it's just Native by Carlton is the company name. Everything we do is game calls. But that's kind of our title is Native by Carlton. So website's fully set up for the viewers. I'll let you come up with it. Let's do like a 35% off for guys that are listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put together a code for me and we'll get it up and running and run it for the summer.
Yeah. So guys, check the description and the link. Check the description for that discount code. So if you're looking to get some elk calls, we'll put a discount code down in the description. So just check that out and head over to the website and do some shopping.
Yep.
Heck yeah. That's really generous, Mark.
Shane, what do you got going on this fall, man? You got any big hunts people need to stay tuned for?
I got four elk tags.
Nice.
I'm pretty stoked about it. If I fill one, I'll be happy.
Where all you going?
My usual, Washington, Oregon, and then here in Idaho. So, that's my usual deal. So,
very cool.
I'll put a little more emphasis in on the Washington hunts, than what I have in years past. So, but,
well, guys, I'm just telling you, if you don't follow Shane yet, you probably shouldn't, because, he just pisses you off. Because he just always kills stuff. So while you're sitting there still waiting to see something, Shane's already like 9 animals deep. So he just frustrates people, I think.
Well, I don't know why they hate me. I mean, I always am like, come out, let's hunt. I always have people come out and hunt. So.
Yeah. No, guys, definitely go follow the Bone Maniac on social media. I always love seeing all the animals that you put down. So keep doing what you're doing, man. And good luck this fall, guys. Thank you for listening. You guys have a fantastic week.
Man, appreciate it. Appreciate the time.